physics.co.uk.
Phenomenal.
Hi physics lovers, welcome to Mr. Marlin's Help My Physics pod show number 9. And on this show we'll be looking at speed. What does speed mean and why is it so vital we don't have too much of it when we drive? We'll also look at Mars invasions, who is invading who? And of course we have a special guest, just wait and see who that is. But as always we begin the show with some pod safe music, so plug in your earbuds, you're heading to physics, it's the best time of the week. And here is Jimmy Bratcher from the PodSafe Music Network, The Drive.
Sure.
physics is cool.
That was Jimmy Bratcher from the Podsafe Music Network with Drive. Find him at music.podshow.com. Over now to an office somewhere in the deepest secret vaults of MI6. Or is it MI5? Who knows? But anyway, we'll find Bames Joined and Money Pounder.
Come on in, Moneypenny.
You'll need these for your next assignment, John.
Another supercar, capable of travelling at 120 mile per hour. I'll take that, Money Powder.
Well, in fact, no, John. There have been complaints. One council reported you speeding through the streets, putting the public into danger.
But Money Powder, I can't stop quite easily.
I'm sure you can, John, but we are taking no risks. Instead, I've asked you to design you atomic-activated roller shoes. Of course, the speed is only limited to about 60 miles per hour. But that's more than enough to escape through the streets.
What a downer. I thought it was going to be a car.
Strap them on and get them for a test drive. You'll find the activating word is on the sole.
Quite good fit. Let me see. Activating word is, velocity.
What a stupid man! He might have tried them on the streets and not facing my drinks cabinet!
Speed is a measure of how far some object can go in a given time. There are two types of speed. One is called average speed, and the other is called instantaneous speed. And they both have the same units, meters per second or kilometers per hour. Now, instantaneous speed is the speed of an object at an instant in time. For example, if you look at your speedometer on your bike or your car, it will read your instantaneous speed. Average speed is a kind of speed which describes your speed over a journey, where your speed was changing. A bit like your journey to school. Sometimes in the journey you walk quicker than at other times. In fact, sometimes you stop still, which is more likely to be the case than anything else. Now here are some examples of speed. For example, if your teacher tells you you're walking to your physics class with the speed of a snail, then you can turn around and say to him, "I know that, sir. I'm travelling at 0.001 metres per second. A brisk walk is about 3.75 miles per hour. Or in other words, about 2 metres per second, or 6 kilometres per hour. Now those Olympic sprinters you see in the Olympics, they can run 100 metres in about 10 seconds. That gives them an average speed of about 10 metres per second, which translates to about 22.5 miles per hour, or 36 kilometres per hour. Now the speed limit on a French autoroute road is about 130 kilometres per hour, which translates as 80 miles per hour in our language, and 36 metres per second in metres per second. A top flying Boeing 747 has a speed of about 650 miles per hour and travels at an enormous speed of about 290 metres per second. In fact, the official airspeed record is 2,188 miles per hour, which translates as 980.278 metres per second. The space shuttle on re-entry, that comes in about 17,500 miles per hour. Now, speed on its own is not dangerous. It only becomes dangerous when you have to stop quickly or when you collide with another object. It's a sudden change in speed which is so dangerous. Now, you know, if you are to be a responsible citizen, then we have to appreciate that we must regulate our speed to suit where we are. Now, you wouldn't dream of running full tilt down a busy street because you would collide with other people. You just couldn't stop in time. Well, it's the same on the roads. The only difference is that people die in collisions. In fact, 3,200 people died on the roads last year. And scientists think that reducing the speed to 20 miles per hour in towns, that's about 32 kilometres per hour, will save lives. Now, why will reduce the speed save lives? The answer lies in the ability to stop safely. At 20 miles per hour or 32 kilometres per hour, on good conditions, it will take 12 metres for you to stop, 6 metres to think about it, and a further 6 metres to do the stopping. Now, travelling at 30 miles per hour, or 48 kilometres per hour, it takes a total of 23 metres to stop. That is 9 metres to think about it, and 40 metres to actually stop. So really, it's all down to physics. You might be able to break the laws of society, but you cannot break the laws of physics, as I've heard said some other place. So for all you people out there who are embarking on your driving instructions and driving tests, then bear this in mind. It's a very important thing which happens in physics and in a physics class. It's to have an understanding and appreciation that the faster you go, the more dangerous you are actually travelling. So bear witness to that. Keep safe. And I'll leave you with this rather powerful advert.
This is the sound of a child being hit by a car at 40 miles an hour. This is the sound of a child being hit by a car at 30 miles an hour.
If you hit me at 40 miles an hour, there's around an 80% chance I'll die. Hit me at 30 and there's around an 80% chance I'll live.
Think. It's a 30 miles an hour speed limit for a reason.
The beginning of the end for the human race. For what men first thought were meteors or the often ridiculed flying saucers are in reality the flaming vanguard of the invasion from Mars.
Looks like they're going to come out of that gully pretty soon. We'll have to rush our defenses to be ready when they do.
The guards need plenty of reinforcements.
We'll get them. Lieutenant, look!
They slashed across country like scythes, wiping out everything that's trying to get away from them.
That explains why communication is cut the moment their machines begin moving.
Montreal's blacked out. Nothing more has come through.
Same thing that happened on the Pacific coast. Anything from them yet?
No, Mr. Secretary. We've had nothing from San Francisco for over 5 hours.
The nations of the world mobilize their armed might, rushing to defend the Earth against the unknown weapons of the super race from the Red Planet. Is there nothing that can stop the Martian death machines?
Guns, tanks, bombs, they're like toys against them.
We know now that we can't beat their machines. We've got to beat them.
All over the world, human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies, whom no one has ever seen. Panic that sweeps around the globe as the great masses of mankind flee blindly in a headlong stampede of hysteria.
That was the 1953 science fiction classic War of the Worlds, based on a story by H.G. Wells, who incidentally frightened half of America with a radio play of the same name. Check out the DVD and you can hear the radio play as well. Now, when that film was made in the 1950s, people believed that we would be invaded from Mars by the Martians themselves. Over the last 30 to 40 years, it's been the opposite way about. It's been Earthlings who've been invading Mars, sending umpteen different kinds of spacecraft to visit the planet's surface. Now, in August, NASA launched the Phoenix Lander to search for water on Mars. It is due to land on Mars around May 2008. Now, why Phoenix? Well, this is a name given to a mythical bird which lives for 500 years, and when it dies, it bursts into flames, only to be reborn from the ashes. NASA had sent two previous missions to Mars, but Mars Polar Lander and Mars Surveyor 2001 both failed to send back data. So Phoenix rises out of the ashes of the previous two unsuccessful missions. It will use equipment that should have worked in the last two missions. Now its main mission is to seek out and prove that water exists in the polar regions of Mars. Now, why water? Well, Mars is a cold desert planet with no surface water, but previous orbiting missions have identified large amounts of subsurface water in the northern polar regions. Phoenix will land there in May 2008 and dig into the soil taking samples. It is hoped that the soil will contain water and other important chemicals for life. There even could be life there itself. So keep your fingers crossed for a successful mission come May 2008. Now, ever since an Italian astronomer by the name Schiaparelli found out that when he looked at Mars, he found what he thought was canals on the surface in about 1877. And he believed then that Mars must have life on it. Now, the canals were a misunderstanding or a mistranslation, really meaning channels. Now, we know that there are long canyons on Mars which show that water once flowed there. Now, they're not made by Martians, though. So, there's two main reasons why this mission is so important. It's the study of the history of water on Mars by examining water ice below the Martian surface. Liquid water does not currently exist on the surface of Mars, as we said, but evidence from Mars Global Surveyor, Odyssey, and Exploration Rover missions suggest that water once flowed in the canyons, and it is believed to be favourable for life. Phoenix will explore how the Martian surface could, in fact, keep life alive there. It's going to use sophisticated chemical experiments to assess the soil's composition, hopefully find such life-giving elements as carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus and hydrogen. Ask your physics teacher about that. He'll probably direct you to a chemistry teacher. Never mind. Phoenix will also dig into soil protected from harmful solar radiation, looking for organic life itself. Now, the second part of it is to determine if the Martian Arctic soil could support life. Now, recent discoveries show that life can exist in the most extreme conditions. Certain bacterial spores lie dormant in bitterly cold. That's if they're almost sleeping. And they can lie there for millions of years and become activated once conditions become favourable. A bit like those seeds you have in the packets. Now, such dormant microbial colonies may exist in the Martian Arctic, and during brief periods, about every 100,000 years, the soil environment in the shallow lakes will actually cause them, in fact, to come to life. However, Phoenix will probe the history of liquid water that may have existed in the Arctic as recently as 100,000 years ago. By digging into the soil and water ice just below the surface and analysing the chemistry of the soil and ice with robust instruments, scientists will better understand the history of the Martian Arctic. So there you have it. Perhaps come May, we will know that life exists on Mars. Keep up to date by visiting the website of the Phoenix mission, and I'll give you the address in the show notes. But why are we talking about Mars? Well, quite simply, if you look east, around about 10:30 at night now, or maybe 11 o'clock or approaching midnight, you can't miss this red kind of star appearing in the sky. It's not a star, it's the planet Mars, and that is where all the excitement is heading. So in this week's Space Zone, we've looked at Mars. Keep your fingers crossed, it could have life. And now we go over for our special guest, and she's settling into her favourite armchair somewhere up north, somewhere where the mountains are high and the rivers run deep. Yes, you've guessed it. She makes her return. It's the Granny. The only one and only Granny Physics.
Well, hello, children. It's Granny Physics again. I nearly forgot my name there. It's been such a long time since I've spoken to you. And I'm back from my holidays now. I'm back at the physics cottage away up north. And you, yes, you're back at school as well, and you're getting well and truly settled into your physics courses. I hope you're beginning to enjoy them. Well, that kind Mr. Mallon has asked me to tell you about a book which I've been reading in the last couple of weeks. In fact, I took it with me on holiday, and I read it every single day I was there. You know, I just love to teach things about physics, and I'm sitting here at my desk right this minute, waiting for some lovely counsel to come and phone me and tell me that they're needing me in some school because some physics teacher's taken not well, because he can't face getting out of his bed with the flu. Any minute now, I think, the phone will ring and I'll be there, maybe at a school near you. Well, we live in hope, don't we? Anyway, back to the book, if I can wrestle it from this damn cat. Come here, you... The cat has let go of the book. Call him the cat, you remember him. Anyway, the book which I'm going to be talking about is this lovely book here called Can You Feel the Force? Well, not Can You Feel the Force, but that's the title of the book. And it's one of the best physics books I've ever seen for quite a while. It's written by a man called Richard Hammond. You remember him? Yes, he was the man who drove too fast and ran into a field. Poor man. Fortunately for him, he's okay now. He actually recovered from a very serious crash. And I'm so glad because he contributes quite a bit to the world of physics, this Richard Hammond. So best of luck to you, Richard. His book is very good indeed. Let me tell you some of the things that you can read about inside it. You can find out how the world goes round. Well, I know that myself after a few whiskies, but that's a different matter. What else? Why does your stomach go right up to your mouth when you drive a car? Well, we can leave that bit out as well. Oh, my favourite one, I'm seeing one at the moment. How does flies walk on a ceiling? All these little things are in his book, and if you're taking physics in third year, it's the book to be seen with. Drag it out your bag when the teacher's talking to you, and you will be so, so impressed that he'll almost give you good marks. There's a special page about friction. There's a one great big page about types of energy and how things move. It's a really good book, and I've spent a lot of my time reading it in the last couple of weeks in Barbados, near Portobello. Anyway, there's a good one here saying, how fast can you fall? Well, with a few whiskies, I think I can fall quite a bit. But anyway, it's a fantastic picture showing you the effects of someone falling through the air. And the pictures are really frightening you. In fact, it's the only way I can get that cat to come and get his dinner. I don't know where it's gone to, that cat, but it should be about somewhere. Anyway, Mr. Mallon, this is a great book for you to read. It's called, once again, Can You Feel the Force? Check it out at your local library. And it's called Putting the Fizz Back into Physics. Well, we know Mr. Mallon does that anyway. But anyway, it's a great book. Richard Hammond, Can You Feel the Force? And is published by Darling Kindersley, that lovely people who produce good books for those children to read. Well, anyway, I'm away now to sit by the phone in the hope that that phone will ring and I might be teaching in a school near you. From Granny Physics at the Granny Physics Cottage, have a good read and see you all later on.
Granny Physics brings us to the end of Pod Show number 9. Hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you find out a lot more about the Mars mission, and take care on the roads, especially if you're learning to drive, and that you watch out that speed is very, very important. Keep speed low. I'll see you again in a few weeks' time for pod show number 10. But in the meantime, have a good time at school. Take care. Learn well. See you all soon.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.